Good morning, everyone. Hope everyone's doing well. I have to admit, you know, we're going to start the show here in just a second and dive into our first story. But man, I am exhausted. So
I could tell when I saw you. There's mornings where I tell you it's rougher than usual. Just by your eyes.
And it's not just because I got a haircut.
No, it's your eyes, because it's your focus. Like, I can just totally tell, like, a morning, or actually it's afternoon for you, but I can tell an afternoon that you're struggling.
That's what I feel like. And so the reason is because my mom came to visit. She flew in last night, and so she got here. Her flight got in early, got in at like 4:45 in the morning.
Oh, geez.
Which, you know, like, if I wasn't a good son, like, I would have, like, you know, I would have been like, hey, just get an Uber and don't wake me, you know, come here. But you can't do that with your mom. And I haven't seen her for like nearly 2 years. So to say, hey, it's early, just take an Uber or get a taxi, come to the house. And by the way, I need my beauty sleep. Let me sleep in.
Hey, 4:45, that's when I wake up.
But I also couldn't go to sleep because I was anxious about seeing her. So I was, you know, I was up late. I was like working late. And so I was up until like 1 a.m. And finally, I fell asleep, and I didn't want to wake my wife, so I sat. I fell asleep on the couch with Grover, and I snuck out. My alarm went off. I was like, "This got to be a joke. Like, my alarm's going off at this hour. No way. It's got to be a joke." You know, I feel like it's like a hostage situation. Like, what's going on around here? Oh, yeah, I got to go get my mom. So, yeah, I was bleary eyed, and she took a nap, and I can't even keep my eyes open. So, but I've got. And then I spent like 3 hours writing this show, so I've got a ton of news to get to today. So enough about my sob story about being tired. We've got a lot to get to today on the show. First, though, I want to tell you about our friends over at Manscaped. You know, look, I got Manscaped, right? Yesterday, I actually went to the haircut, the barber, and they were using this like old razor, and I'm like, "What are you doing? You need to get Manscaped razors because they're so much better. Skin safe technology with a ceramic blades. They're replaceable, precision engineered for maximum confidence while trimming anywhere below the waist, above the waist, around your ears. It doesn't matter. They are fantastic, and it's waterproof as well. Huge fan of Manscaped, and I'm thrilled that they're sponsoring the show today. Because look, you've got to, when the thing is here, you know, if you have a problem, right? Like you can't shave properly or you're constantly cutting yourself. You've got to try their brand new Lawnmower 4.0. You can basically, it makes you feel fantastic wherever you're shaving. So, you know, Manscaped, obviously they talk about shaving below the waist because that's what they're great at. And they've even got a light to help you get around those like nooks and crannies of stuff. So join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get everything ready with 20% off and free shipping. You're going to get 20% off and free shipping with our code INVEST. Really fantastic. Inside the package that you get, you're going to get their Lawnmower 4.0. You're going to get their Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer. You're going to get the Crop Preserver, which is their deodorant, their Crop Reviver toner, and boxer briefs, a travel bag to hold all of the stuff that you do when you take when you're going on a trip. So really fantastic. And you use it on your beard, don't you, on a regular basis?
I do indeed. I do. But I do have to push back a little bit. I love Manscaped. I love that thing. But when you get that hot foam on the back of your neck and then that straight razor and then the way that it feels when they clean that off, you can't beat that feeling.
No. Well, you certainly don't want that, though, below the waist.
No. Like, no. You know, you do not want that below the waist.
No way.
Like, but yeah, no, I travel with that thing. And what I love about it is it's got a little charger that comes with it. Yeah. And you leave it sit in the charger. But then if you're ever traveling or whatever and you don't want to take a charger, you just grab the cord. And then the cord plugs into the bottom of it, too. So if it's ever out of battery, it can just go. So it's just such a great travel thing. And I've traveled with it for a week and never had to charge it. So and I shave, you know, I trim this up about every day on my cheeks and stuff. Cause if I don't, I get these stragglers.
Gina in our chat says, I need Manscaped for my nooks and crannies. There you go. Check them out at Manscaped. Don't let the name throw you. I mean, hey, if you know, you don't have to be a man just for it, right? But anyway, go right now. Get 20% off and free shipping with code INVEST at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with code INVEST at manscaped.com for a clean trinity and beyond. Your space balls will thank you.
Hey, that's a good movie.
Yeah, that is a good movie. All right. All right, let's do it, everyone. Whew, I don't want to talk about this because it really bothers me. All right, let's talk about the eviction moratorium. That's where we're going to start the show today, on the eviction moratorium, the eviction crisis, which is in full swing. And before I get into why I think it actually stinks, we just got some new job data out yesterday, and we're going to get more on Friday. And surprise, surprise, it's not good. Yeah, it turns out that people don't want a crappy $1 an hour raise while company profits are up 43%. Something's out of whack here. Imagine that. You know, Dan Price, I like Dan Price's tweet here, if I can pull this up. He tweeted, you know, of course, Dan Price, you guys know who Dan Price is, right? He is the guy who, of course...
the tree hugger.
The tree hugger, right. He's the guy who increased salaries for his employees so that they could have a living wage, you know? So everyone got a minimum wage of $70,000 in his company. Everyone told him he was crazy for that. Well, his profits soared. His business doubled. His employees were happy. All of that. Can't find the tweet, but he points out that, oh, it's amazing that people don't want to take these crappy jobs for a $1 an hour raise when your corporate profits are through the roof and these CEOs are now making millions in golden parachute money and everything else. Of course they don't want these crappy jobs, these terrible working conditions where they're forced to work these long swing shifts, suicide shifts, as we've seen, and not being paid for it or not being treated well. You go home to try to get a few hours of sleep, they need you right back again. They can't give you health benefits, on and on the list goes. So that's where we're at right now with the job issue. Right now we've got job data showing that this economy is not where it needs to be, and that we still have millions of people that are unemployed. Add on top of that, we've still got a pandemic out there, which I don't know if you've noticed. And now we've got people facing homelessness and evictions. And it seems that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention actually, yes, they can issue another eviction moratorium because that's just what they did, of course. President Biden meant that this is what he meant when he announced the federal eviction moratorium. It wasn't going to be him necessarily, but he was pushing the CDC to do it. So we've gotten more details about this eviction moratorium now, and I'm going to tell you why particularly I'm not happy with this. Number one, the new moratorium is for 60 days only. Okay, 60 days only. So get your crap together, America. You got 60 days to pull it together. Hey, like if you're like this guy, you know, you want to wind up like this guy without a home, you better somehow raise those thousands of dollars in back rent, okay?
What happened to October?
No, I mean, the new moratorium is for 60 days, okay? And it applies to counties with, get this, to substantial or high transmission rate of COVID. So to be clear, you have 60 days to qualify, okay? A county must have at least 50 COVID cases per 10,000 people over a seven-day period. Can you imagine the bureaucratic nightmare to figure this out? Who picks this arbitrary number? So fortunately, though, at least over 80% of U.S. counties qualify. So, but wait a second. Let me understand this. Clayton, can you help me understand this? Sure, Clayton, I'll help you understand this.
Yes, please.
Only the counties that are currently experiencing high numbers of cases are then qualified to get to not be kicked out of your house, okay? Well, what if your job is gone as a result of the pandemic and it happened months ago? Yeah, sorry, you don't qualify because your case numbers are now down. No problem. So you don't clearly have behind rent because you lost your job. Like, get your act together.
Well, and what happens if you work in a county? The business itself is in the county where it's affected. You lost your job. You're working remotely in your home in a county that doesn't have that.
You're asking ridiculous questions. Just shut up. Just shut up and take it, okay? This is what you've got.
Yay. Thank you, Democrats.
Thank you, President Biden, for your really crappy eviction moratorium. And go out there and do a victory lap as people are being thrown out.
I just got a really quick question. How many hoops, like when the military is in there asking for their budget increases and stuff, like, is that by county too? Like how do they break that up, and what kind of barriers do they create for them to get taken care of? Just out of curiosity, do we know that?
There's no restrictions.
What?
You just literally have to be an American senator for you to bring any kind of pork home for your state. That's it. There's nothing else. But if it benefits poor people, then there's all sorts of hoops and hurdles we have to jump through. Here's my favorite part of this new moratorium. Okay, again, it's a 60-day window. This is the part of the eviction moratorium that I love. We'll see if it has any teeth and if it would actually hold up in court. But the new moratorium would actually give out criminal penalties to landlords who evict people during this pandemic. They would also be fined $100,000 with up to 1 year in prison if the eviction does not result in death. This is literally in the language. So you're going to be fined $100,000 with up to 1 year in prison if the eviction does not result in death. However, if they do die, like if you do kick your tenant out, right, they would be fined up to $250,000 if that person does in fact die. Okay, so you kick a tenant out, they're homeless, they end up, I don't know, contracting COVID or something else, they end up dying, you're fined $250,000. So that's what the CDC deems as like the worth of your life. $250,000.
Now, here they go. They are creating all of this, and I'm really curious, what is the application process for this like? Like, so not only do you have to apply now, but now you have to have people in the government that are actually going to have to go through this data to see if you apply. And it gives them so many loopholes to be like, sorry, you don't apply. We've only got 49 cases here.
Right.
So out of 10,000. Apologize. Yeah.
Now that person died of complications from COVID, but not actually COVID. Like they had congenital heart failure. So that person technically didn't die from COVID. So therefore, you can still be evicted from your house. See how these things go hand in hand? Makes no freaking sense whatsoever.
Further just solidifying my argument that if they would have done UBI from the beginning, people would not be having to do this crap. This is crap. I mean, this is it. It always just somehow doesn't go well for the people.
Oh, yeah, that's why I said right off the top, like, you know, and why we need additional stimulus right now. We have a jobs report that sucks. We have jobs that aren't coming back because businesses are gone. Okay. And we have still a raging pandemic. Cases are up across the country. Totally all across the country, cases are up now again. Once again, as we're heading into the fall, so we got a 60-day window here. 60-day window. And you're gonna get fined $250,000 if you kick a tenant out and they die of COVID. What a big slap on the wrist to those billion-dollar landlord companies. Right? I mean, they're really gonna be worried about this. This is like a risk-reward thing, right, for them. Oh, wait a minute, okay, if we evict that person, we get a fine $100,000 if we have to follow all through all of these loopholes. If this doesn't get thrown out by the Supreme Court, which is pro-business anyway.
Why don't they just preemptively count on Nancy Pelosi's tweet on the 61st day and just extend it beyond that? Right. You know what I mean?
Right. So October, September 31st rolls around. Oh, eviction moratorium time. She's like, oh, I gotta get out my phone again. Here I go. I'm having my ice cream. Here we go. We should extend the eviction moratorium. We're not out of COVID just yet. Boom. Okay, I gotta get to that fundraiser. I gotta get to my fundraiser time now.
And you gotta imagine they're like in Congress. They know this is coming. People are like, hey, you know, we're focused on the infrastructure right now. We don't care about these people. Just leave me alone. I'm focused on this bill right now. But what are you working on? Well, I'm working on this, you know, this corporate thing. It's just money for these corporations. Like, it's really important. They're pushing me. My donors are pushing me. I don't have time for the people right now. I'll get back to you soon. Okay, that ends tomorrow. I know I have not had time to get to that. I'm still doing my donor work. like, we're just very last minute. They still, at the last minute, they weren't even thinking about us. It took the next day for them to do something.
You're not ruling anything out.
Good morning. Sunday morning.
That's your leader right there. So the same group of landlords that is challenging the moratorium with the Supreme Court, they filed an emergency motion yesterday asking a judge to ban this new moratorium. These billionaire landlords, they got their legal team already fired up, already filing a motion. They're supported by the National Association of Realtors, by the way. So they're asking to overturn this thing. They say it's unconstitutional. They need their money.
You don't understand. We've already kicked people out of their houses. What are we going to do? It's going to make us look bad.
We've already started this process. But fortunately, the county that we're in doesn't qualify. So this one, a couple of our tenants died. It's okay. No big deal. We don't get, you know, we're not getting our hands slapped here with a $100,000 fine. What do you guys think of this? Drop me a comment below and like and subscribe to the channel if you haven't already done that.
Well, and Donald Ford saying most landlords are not millionaires. And we understand that. We understand that. But
we've talked about that at length here on the show.
Yeah.
You know, many of the landlords are, that's my point. My point is the people that have the legal authority and they're going to try to overturn this are dealing with this on a case by case basis. Most, like, you know, small landlords don't have the wherewithal to like hire a big legal team to go and do this. And they're also not raking in billions of dollars like these big landlords that are complaining about it. I mean, again, I said yesterday on the show, stocks for these landlord companies on Wall Street are up almost 30% in profit this year during the pandemic. Something out of whack here?
Well, and it's these little, the smaller landlords. That's exactly why we were saying there should have been a UBI from the very beginning, like all these other countries did, because then the landlords would not be in the position they're in. Because if the people would have got money, the landlords would have got money, these big corporations would have got money, everybody would have got money that needed it, but they keep trying to bypass the people who need it the most. And when they bypass the people, and a lot of times they're bypassing those, you know, renters that have like one property. It's a couple who, you know, decided we've got enough money to get a rental property to kind of pay our own mortgage. Let's do that. Those people as well. So that's why we've been arguing for a UBI and how that would have kept this from ever happening.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So let me know your thoughts on this in the comments below. Well, guys, we're already screwing up the next pandemic. Like, we've done a great job of screwing up the first one. Well, we're learning a lot more this morning about what's inside this infrastructure stimulus bill, and it's really pissing me off. Have we not learned our lesson in the United States about underfunding pandemic preparedness? Didn't we learn our lesson? Didn't we just get our hats handed to us because we slashed the budget that would have helped us spring into action to stop COVID? Yes, that's exactly what happened. Instead, we had to scramble for months as millions of people became sick. Thousands of people died as a result. Well, here we go again. And this time we can blame it on the Democrats. So the Senate's bipartisan... Oh, is this not showing up here? Stupid dongle. Stupid cable. There we go. Is that working? There we go. Okay. So the Senate's bipartisan infrastructure bill includes no significant investment in public health. Meanwhile, congressional Democrats are reportedly planning to scale back Joe Biden's proposed investment in pandemic preparedness by more than 80%. 80%. Now is the time to slash pandemic preparedness. By more than 80%. This is what's happening right now. Like, this is what's... How do you...
Say what?
Exactly. By more than 80% right now. Whereas the president called for spending $30 billion on fortifying the nation's defenses against contagious diseases, Nancy Pelosi and company are planning to dedicate just $5 billion. Of the $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill, they're going to spend $5 billion of the $3.5 trillion for pandemic preparedness purposes. Obama called for this, and no one paid attention to it. Remember, people laughed at him? Remember the press conference where he went into detail about how like this could be country altering and how we need to shore up, but he couldn't get the Republican Congress to do it. They laughed at him. Because who does it really benefit, right? You're buying a bunch of ventilators. You're buying a bunch of masks. Who's it really benefiting? It's not benefiting really anybody on Wall Street, right? So we don't spend money on that stuff. And then Trump cut the budget, right? It was a huge criticism of Trump, you'll remember, during his presidency. He's like, well, if he didn't slash this particular budget, we may have actually been ready instead of having to scramble for months. Well, now his vice president, Obama's vice president, President Biden, is now in charge. And they're going to do it again on his watch. And yet he's asked for $30 billion and they're slashing it down to five. Here's the title of this. Congress is already botching the next pandemic. COVID caught the United States napping through a cacophony of shrieking alarms. The CDC was spending only $500 million a year on programs aimed at tackling emerging diseases. The NIH, their budget for program on infectious diseases, meanwhile, was roughly $5 billion, with only a small fraction of that sum going towards pandemic prevention. Little to nothing shoring up hospital surge capacity, their ability to deal with flooded ICU beds and ventilators and everything else that we need for a pandemic. And all the PPP, right? I mean, all of the preparedness gear and garb and gowns and masks and gloves and everything. Just think about this for a second, right? I don't know how many of you could drive through different states and you see your armory, right? Do you see your armory in your neck of the woods? Do you have an armory near you?
I don't, but I've seen
in Pennsylvania, I would drive by the armory. I think they have them in every state, right? National Guard armories where they keep weapons. So we have all of these like depots, right? Strategically placed around the United States in the event that we're ever attacked, like the movie Red Dawn, you know, a 1980s movie, like suddenly the Russians are here, right? So we have billions of dollars set aside that in the moment's notice, you know, we could have tanks and helicopters. Heck, our police departments now are getting billions of dollars in Humvees and armored vehicles and all sorts of weapons, right? Defense, anything tied to defense, we're ready to go. Watch out for those Russians. You know, who was in that movie, Red Dawn, the original?
Patrick Swayze, C. Thomas Howell.
Like, where are these guys? Like, they're ready to go. Well, the Senate last week, argued that we need to update our nuclear weapons. So what do? They wrote themselves a check for $25 billion. They did it behind closed doors, didn't debate it. There was hardly any dissent. $25 billion just for nuclear weapons to be updated. But our pandemic preparedness is dramatically underfunded, and they can't make this an important part of human infrastructure plan. Like, what's more important than that? Explain that to me. What's more important than making sure that the infrastructure of our health structure, our health system doesn't collapse under its weight again when we have to deal with something like this? I mean, all the signs are there. We're talking about going into a fall of this year with Delta variant and all of this other stuff. We're seeing rising case numbers across the country in certain, you know, in different areas now. And it's not a matter of like if it happens again. It's a matter of preparation because it's going to happen again. We're going to have outbreaks. We're going to have big outbreaks of things from in the future.
Well, and put that in perspective, that number, $25 billion going to updating nuclear weapons and $500 billion over 5 years. So basically $100 billion. So a quarter of the budget of what we're getting for infrastructure the first year is going into nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. In 2021, we're updating nuclear weapons.
Right. Huge priority, my friend. You know, those things, they haven't been touched in like 6 months. You know, we got to get in there and make sure we get the most up-to-date camera equipment and electronic equipment so that we can get ready to not launch nuclear missiles and just spend more money on it.
I mean, if they're in there because there's like, okay, we have had two incompetent presidents in a row. We need to get rid of this red button. If they're removing that, okay. I could probably vote for that because we keep going degressing in president mental capacity, so I think that needs
more
to be.
Important. I mean, what's more important, right? You know, if you can line, you know, if Nancy Pelosi can line defense contractors' pockets, that's exactly what she's going to do. You know, that's exactly how they stay in office. They keep making sure that these people get their pockets lined. And when it comes to actually caring about the American people, they screw you once again.
You're not ruling anything out.
Good morning. Sunday morning.
Well, and that's even people love Elizabeth Warren, and she's done a lot of good, but she fights a lot for, what is it, Raytheon that's in her district? Raytheon or Lockheed? One of them.
I think it's Lockheed, but I'm gonna forget.
But they're in her district. But
the thing is, they're all in everyone's district. That's the brilliance of what these companies have done. They literally have, they've set up shop all across the United States in everyone's backyard on purpose so that, you know, these like Boeing and Raytheon, they all have plants in like all 50 states on purpose so that this piece is manufactured in Tennessee. And I can't go against Boeing in Tennessee because they make all of the radiators for this or whatever, you know. And then up in Alaska, that's where we have this that's being taken care of. And so all of these pieces are built in different parts of the world, different parts of the United States. So they all have them in their backyard. That's how this goes, unfortunately. Meanwhile, now we've got this story, which is all, I mean, really kind of part of this entire narrative, which is, how are we going to pay for infrastructure? I mean, we thought we were going to go after tax cheats, right? We thought we were going to go after people who, you know, the wealthy, right? We thought we were going to go after billionaires.
Why can't we just always start answering that question when anybody from the government asks that question? Why can't we just say, why don't you not worry about it? You're not paying for it. We are. Like, you're not paying for it. So shut up.
Exactly. So here's what, you know, this Huffington Post piece this morning, it's pretty amazing because what we're, again, learning more about what's in this infrastructure bill and how exactly they're going to pay for this. Incredibly frustrating because the senators are deciding instead they're going to go after unemployment fraud, but not tax cheats to pay for infrastructure. Yes. No. They'd rather go after people who cheated the unemployment system. Okay. I'm sure that's huge. I'm sure it's monumental compared with the billions of dollars that is cheated out of the tax system by all of these billionaires and millionaires who are offshoring money, hiding in different accounts left and right. I saw an indictment late last week by a billionaire who had been like faking money, hiding it in like offshore accounts and running it through different shell companies and all this. That's where the money is that Uncle Sam is not bringing in from these tax cheats. You don't even want to give the IRS extra money to go after these guys. You don't want to do that, right? The Republicans didn't want to do that. So as part of this, under pressure from conservative groups, the GOP senators refused to strengthen IRS enforcement to pay for the bipartisan infrastructure deal. So what instead they're doing is the Senate voted to move forward on the $1 trillion infrastructure, which includes $500 billion in new spending on roads, bridges, and waterways. Much of the wrangling was not over just what would be in the bill, but how to pay for it. And on that front, Republicans and conservative anti-tax groups seemed to get most of what they wanted. Yeah, Democrats rolled over, right? Democrats proposed raising taxes on wealthy individuals and corporations. But the IRS estimated that it missed out on an average of $441 billion per year. Literally would basically pay for this infrastructure package, by the way. So instead, you know, because the richest 25% of Americans pay less in taxes than many ordinary workers do, and many of the nation's top earners pay next to nothing in taxes. But Republican senators put their foot down and said they would oppose legislation with stepped-up IRS enforcement. Instead, the bipartisan legislation will go after fraud in the unemployment insurance program, which benefits struggling Americans who are out of work.
Well, you know what's crazy? Jennifer, she went through about an 8 to 10 week process of trying to prove that she was qualified to get her unemployment. So she had to do a court thing and everything on Zoom and all that stuff and go all through all this stuff. She had to produce this paperwork and everything. And then finally at the end, they're like, okay, yeah, you got it. But at any time in that process, she could have been denied and had to pay it back. And so you got to wonder, like, if one person that I'm, like, personally connected to had to do that, there's going to be a lot of false positives in that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. And so what, they're criminals? And Congress is going to spend their time going after people who are getting a $600 check? Really? That's where there's such immense fraud that's how we're going to pay for our infrastructure bill? I would love to see the numbers on this, right? I would love to see the numbers. You know, Democrats, I love this point. Democrats say they have no problem rooting out waste and fraud in the unemployment program, but they take issue with going after only that pot of money, long a target of Republicans, and not after people who are evading their taxes as well.
Well, it always irritates me too. Like, you know, for instance, let's just, for an example, use the drone program. I'm talking about consumer drones, like a drone that I have that I fly around for fun. One person flew one into a geyser at Yosemite Park, right? So now there's all these rules and regulations around drones in parks because of one person. You know, I would be fine giving a percentage of people something they don't deserve to make sure that I was helping more people. And it's like, they're so scared that during a pandemic, somebody's going to get a little bit of extra money that they may not deserve, that they're going to put people through this that don't deserve it. And like I said, all these false positives that we're going to have, like, there's just so many things that are going to go wrong with going this direction instead of the, you know, IRS direction.
Yeah, this is what they're more concerned about. You know, and Kristen Swenson. Kristen, we missed you. I missed you. I haven't seen you in a while. The thing about unemployment is, she says, you upload required documentation for each submission and are approved based on that. So why would they come after you after the fact? Right. Here's my favorite part of this story, though. So the Labor Department's Inspector General has estimated the state workforce agencies improperly pay out as much as $87 billion in federal benefits Congress approved in response to the pandemic. So $87 billion, okay? Now, compare that to the $441 billion that's estimated tax cheats are taxing the system. So let's go after this one. Now, that $87 billion seems high, right? It seems high until you realize that some of it is just mistakes. Okay, some of it, and most of it are mistakes or errors or things like that. It's not fraud. That sum includes both erroneous payments and actual fraud. And it represents about 10% of the projected overall amount of federal unemployment spending. So this is what you're spending your time on. 10% of the $87 billion, basically.
Well, and you know what? What's really going to upset me is what's going to happen here. And you know this is going to happen. There's going to be a single mom who probably fudged a little bit to get the money because she needed it during a pandemic to feed her children, and she's going to end up with a criminal record.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. But these tax cheats who are literally hiding money in offshore accounts when they should have been paying taxes on them and should have been going to prison, federal prison for tax fraud, or will be off scot-free. You know, and it all comes down to why exactly this happened is because these Republicans caved to their donors who don't want any increased scrutiny on their taxes or tax evasion schemes. And yet, you're right. Look, I don't condone fraud in any way, right? So, you know, yes, if there's someone cheating the system, absolutely that should be investigated. But as someone pointed out in our chat, we should do both. We should look at, yes, if someone was cheating the system, like insurance fraud and just like that, yes, right? Trying to take advantage of the system, like, oh, I need to get insurance payout because I broke my knee and they have video of you playing tennis. You know, I always love that, right? Like, yeah, but I can't work because my knee doesn't work. And then they see you playing tennis every day after, you know.
But Clayton, you understand, like, if they did both, they would have to go after their buddies because they're the ones. So if they go after the unemployment, there's no risk of getting any of their buddies caught in the net. There's no dolphins in the tuna, so to speak, if they just do the unemployment.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. So your big money donors, you're fine. You guys are fine. Nothing to worry about.
Nothing's going to fundamentally change.
Nothing's going to fundamentally change. That's what Biden said.
Come on, man.
Sorry, it's true, buddy. It is true. We tell the truth around here. We're also got more stories to get to. We're going to get to censoring in just a moment. And guess who's making a comeback politically?
I've already got in my mind who I think it is.
All right, don't say
it. And I hope I'm wrong. I won't say it.
I'll challenge you. Yeah, let me know who you think it is. She says she might run for office if God asks her to.
Yeah. That statement alone is what makes me think I know who it is.
I know. Yeah, God told me to do it. Okay, God, you speak to God? God tells you to do that? So it would be divine if you run for office then, right? If God told you to do it, how can we vote against that, right? God told you to do it. Yeah, great, great. But first, I want to tell you about our friends over at nuts.com. Oh, my gosh. Our family was sitting around the other night, and they said, oh, my gosh, huge fan of Nuts. Please, can we order some more? Please, can we order some more from nuts.com? Everyone was going around the table talking about their favorites. It was like a five-minute conversation about their favorite different things from nuts.com. They don't just have just nuts, too. They have all kinds of different baking ingredients and vegan options, gluten-free options. But, you know, some of my favorite are like the roasted pistachios, the dark chocolate-covered pretzels. They have all kinds of, and this is perfect gift tray, too. You can build your own custom gift tray for somebody, you know, someone who's getting ready to go back to school, you know, like as a back to school send off for your college kid for the first time, whatever, you know, just send them a nice gift. Send them some dried apricots, dried kiwi, organic dried mango, all delicious stuff. So nuts.com is the best kept secret of savvy snackers across the country. It isn't just for nut lovers. It's your one-stop online pantry shop. In other words, you have snacks, pantry items, candies, dried fruits, baking mixes, pasta, and so much more. It's a family-run business that takes pride in getting you the freshest ingredients fast. Easy-to-navigate website, great photos of the product. They have over 4,000 products to choose from. Now, guess what? Do you guys want to get free shipping? I know you do. Do you want to get free shipping when you try it for the first time? All you got to do is grab your cell phone and text the number 64,000. So go there like you're going to type in a friend's phone number, okay? And just type in 64,000, okay? Type in 64,000, all right? And then you need to type, when you type the word invest to 64,000, type the word invest, I-N-V-E-S-T, you're going to get free shipping on your first order from nuts.com. That's text the word invest to 64,000. Terms apply, available at nuts.com/terms. Thank you so much. Dried kiwi sounds delicious. I see a lot of people in the chats. Yvonne McCourt says, dried kiwi sounds good. Maddie Bluebird.
I'm not a dried fruit guy. But I do love nuts and chocolate. And chocolate nuts.
Yeah. Sass Crypto says, Clayton, do you not believe in Go? I think God, right? No, I believe in a life force, what do you want to call it? God? You want to give it a human name? You know, like I think that using the word God, like Eckhart Tolle talks about, is deceptive because it almost like immediately paints a picture of like an old white guy in a beard. You know, like we sort of like anthropomorphize these things. So I believe that I'm a very spiritual person and we're
you
all
mean like
connected.
This?
Yeah, exactly. Like an old white guy in a beard. There is God. Holy smokes. I knew I had a good producer.
Yes, I've been hiding out here in my bedroom.
Your divine touch. But I don't believe there's like an anthropomorphized like person sitting there saying, David, you should run for office because America needs you. You know,
I want you to be president.
You do? Is that God talking?
Yes.
Here I am. I'm just sitting here. You know, here's what I want. I was just sitting here on the toilet. And one day, and all of a sudden I heard this.
And I think you need to stop eating broccoli.
Oh, I should stop eating broccoli. Okay, thank you, God. You know, I feel like I'm putting on a little bit of weight lately, God. What should I do?
Stop eating broccoli.
That doesn't make any sense, God. But hey, God told me to stop eating broccoli. Oh, man. The random number gods are on your side today. True. Oh, brother. All right, let's talk about some social media, shall we? I don't know if you've noticed, but there's been quite a bit of censoring going on social media platforms lately. Have you noticed this? Really troubling news. Over at the Twitterverse, one of the biggest social media sites, and Facebook. We'll get to Facebook in a second, but first I want to talk about Twitter. So Twitter has been partnering up with Reuters, and as the Gray Zone reports, this is really troubling. So Twitter has been partnering with a UK government-backed CIA-linked Reuters to censor alternative views. Social media giant Twitter has announced that it will work with Reuters and the Associated Press to censor supposed misinformation on the platform while actively promoting news stories that they deem to be credible. Okay. Both of these media outlets are reliable mouthpieces of Western governments. But Reuters takes the cozy relationship a step further. Because I don't know if you remember or you are informed about Reuters or not. This is why it's, you know, you're not going to see this in the mainstream media talked about. But we will talk about it here because we are not the mainstream media. During the first Cold War, Reuters was funded by the British government. Why? The whole point of Reuters was to spread anti-Soviet propaganda and to disseminate misinformation that served UK foreign policy interests in the Middle East and Latin America. Oh, yes, it's true. So Twitter is going to censor things that they deem are misinformation. They're going to team up with a disinformation news agency to tell us what is misinformation on Twitter. So Max Blumenthal had tweeted about this. Max Blumenthal, a great reporter, tweeted this. Remember Max. The time Twitter slapped a warning label on my factual article exposing Reuters as a British intelligence contractor conducting information warfare ops against Russia? And look at this. Twitter slaps this Twitter safety warning on here. We're excited to announce a new collaboration with the AP and Reuters. Conversations move fast on Twitter, and we need to be able to surface credible context as quickly as possible. Learn more.
So I don't know if you know who Brett Weinstein is, but he's been, you know, pretty vocal about the vaccines and everything during the pandemic. And as you know, well, we're still on Twitter. You're going to get to YouTube, right? We can finish Twitter if you're going to get to YouTube.
Yeah. Well, I was going to talk. Yeah. Facebook, Twitter, and I didn't have a YouTube story today, but well, it just so happens. Yeah, but go ahead.
It actually affects all three because all of them, if you talk about the pandemic, they all cite the CDC and everything. Like if you want up-to-date information, go to the CDC. That's where you get your information. But Brett Weinstein was calling out the CDC and the WHO who were wrong with what they were saying. And he ended up being right. But his videos were taken down and the CDC information is still up, even though he was correct and the CDC was wrong. So like what, if that's going to be the case ongoing, then what are we supposed to do about that?
Exactly. That's the problem though, right? So we hold websites that are awful, like Wikipedia, up as like this standard. Like, oh, I went to Wikipedia. Really? Which is run by billionaire oligarchs, right? Like, I mean, Wikipedia is an absolute joke. So we hold these big sites up that they're somehow, you know, or like we got to trust the CDC website, right? Got to trust that. We got to trust Reuters because clearly that's a mainstream news organization. You know, I got an Amazon, I got one of those Echo shows, you know, that you set it up on the Alexa thing. And, and it was, I was setting it up cause I wanted to be able to show like pictures of the kids, you know, like the, like a little photo frame thing. And it's like, all you need to do is ask blah, blah, blah to get your Echo to get news from trusted sources. Right. And the first thing it gives me is CNN. I'm like, really? So who deems these as credible sources?
Well, that's what I always laugh when you download these apps, like the Apple News app or, you know, YouTube is like, we're going to show more relevant sources and stuff. And it is. It's all the Fox, MSNBC, you know, I mean, MSNBC for a year straight, Rachel Maddow did Alex Jones level Russia propaganda and she's still up. But somebody that goes against her and says that it's not true, they can get taken down. It makes zero sense why they, and it all it boils down to is that's the big money. They have the big money.
Follow the money always, right? Follow the money. They don't want, I mean, follow the money. So that's what Twitter's doing. They're following the money right here to Reuters. You know, I love that. So Max Blumenthal reveals through his reporting how Reuters is a media company that participated in disinformation. So he reveals this in an article, which is a factual article. And then Twitter puts a warning label on it that calls it fake, basically. Twitter is telling us that this story is fake, even though it's true, and putting a warning label on it.
Like they always say, who's going to watch The Watchmen?
Yeah. Oh, no. I tell you who's going to watch The Watchmen. It's the... it's like members of the military who like Facebook is hiring like to make sure that we're not spreading misinformation about the military. We're hiring former CIA members and things like that. Like that's who we hire as watchdogs now to protect us. Like we're fact checking things with these people. Okay.
Well, and even they were even proposing fact checking our text messages.
Yeah. Oh, and the, yeah. Exactly. And oh, by the way, the Associated Press, I forgot to even bag on them. The AP is also close to Western governments, boasting a long history of echoing their dubious talking points. The Newswire published numerous articles in the lead up to the U.S. invasion of Iraq, falsely claiming that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. It also ran fake news stories on supposed Kuwaiti babies being removed from incubators by Iraqi soldiers so that we could swoop in and go to war. Great. So... don't you have a responsibility to tell us that it's propaganda? Like as Ben Norton says, Twitter announced it's going to work with Reuters to censor so-called disinformation. What, of course, it didn't mention is Reuters is a propaganda outlet. Okay. So Twitter now, you know, the thing is people say Twitter's small. It's not. I mean, it really is almost like a public utility in many ways. You know, in what way can you get out information that quickly? I know from a, you know, to me, like it's become so... Really, it's become an incredibly important news gathering source as well. I mean, I remember during the Arab Spring, when I was on the air and anchoring the news, like one of the ways we were able to get information directly from the people that were involved in the uprisings was through Twitter, like getting videos right from the ground, right in the center squares where these uprisings were happening. And the mainstream media was scrambling to try to cover it. So Twitter provided an incredible resource for people to get like information out there quickly. And now Twitter is going to tell us what it deems to be agreeable content or not. They're going to make sure that we get our only opinions right from the Reuters sources. Thank you. Like going to great lengths to censor these voices that they don't like. So Twitter and now Facebook. So Facebook, this story is amazing. We covered this in the newsletter this morning. Researchers who study Facebook political ads, they're doing research on seeing how they basically favor one party or the other or spread disinformation on Facebook. They were banned from Facebook for doing research on Facebook. The research study, they study the origin and the spread of political ads. And Facebook says that they violate its terms of service by scraping user data without permission. Well, how do they do it? They weren't violating anything. Because they do it with a browser plugin that users have to voluntarily download. And then it collects data from people who have the plugin installed on purpose, as well as people they engage with. So Facebook says, this is a violation because it's collecting from people who did not install or consent to the collection. But yes, they did. Because through the plugin, you have to opt into this. Who seeks out a plugin that's opting into the research?
Well, and a lot of people don't realize, like, remember those, like, which Disney princess are you? Any of you that take those? If you take the what Disney princess are you or what actor do you look like? What's your doppelganger? Anytime you guys do any of those things, that you are giving another company your data that they can run against and they can see you. They can see your friends. They can see everything. So, don't do that stuff. But it's kind of the same thing. You have to give those things permission in order for them to get access to that information.
Yeah, and the way that those ads were being run was exactly that way. That was back during the Trump rise, which Trump Rise Office, which was like, you know, what do you like better? Or, you know, do you think that Hillary Clinton or this or that or whatever? And that's how they were able to figure you out. And that was how the game was played back then. What was the name of that movie? Was it called? There was a really good movie about this.
Who was in it?
Was it Benedict Cumberbatch is in it? No. Yeah, well, it was focused though on the Brexit side of things. So I think it was actually called Brexit with Benedict Cumberbatch, and they talk about how they did this on Facebook and did they replicated the exact same Brexit play for the Trump presidency on Facebook.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
It's really good. Yeah, it's really good. Anyway, you know, basically, you know, through this plugin, the researchers and journalists have been able to identify undisclosed support for political ads and other important trends. The researchers also say that Facebook does not welcome the scrutiny, and that's why they were banned.
Yeah.
In totally related news to this, though, here's the hypocrisy of Facebook. In related news, a UK research firm found that Facebook allowed oil and gas companies to advertise its agenda contrary to its company's own environmental policies. Right in the terms of service. According to The Guardian, the report found that 25 oil and gas industry organizations spent at least $9.5 million to place more than 25,000 ads on Facebook's U.S. platforms last year. And guess what? They were seen hundreds of millions of times. Hundreds of millions of times. So they're okay to take money, even though it's a violation of their own terms of service. Even though they say in their terms of service, we can't run these things that are counter to our, you know, our environmental policies, et cetera. But we'll take your money. But if you want to study us to see how misinformation gets spread on our platform, then no, you can't do that, even though it's not a violation because people opted into it. So these are the big companies that continue to censor these voices. And we're seeing it on YouTube, seeing it on Facebook, seeing it on Twitter. It's all big money, and it's all really scary. You know, some of my tech friends, I've mentioned this before, but have said, you know, like, it's good that we censor these people. Like, you got to stop this speech. You know, we got to stop this stuff. It's okay until suddenly someone, you know, on the left starts getting censored.
Yeah.
And then, wow, they don't stop. They don't just stop with the pro Trump stuff. They don't stop there. You mean they also.
That's why I'm a free speech purist. I mean, I think that we need to have, because that's the only way conversations are ever going to take place. You're going to have some fake information out of there, and you got to just learn to weed through it. But, you know, it's like Parler. Any app that comes along that tries to give you that, the big companies took down because they had like 60 posts that were questionable, like calling for violence or whatever. But there was way more stuff on Facebook and Twitter calling for violence from like Antifa and stuff like that than there was on Parler. But they didn't like the fact that Parler was a free speech platform because there's information that they can't censor on there. They don't want you to get information that they can't, that doesn't go through them first. And right. I mean the fact checkers.
And that's why I'm so excited about these decentralized blockchain networks that, you know, like last night I did a video that, you know, really took off and talking about, like, I had a whole interview with a team that's built an amazing, like, decentralized blockchain. And, you know, so it's not behind any kind of a paywall. It's not going, you know, where everyone could have access to it, and no state, no billionaire media company would control it. You know, you have the code up on GitHub and let people build on it. The same way that we build code, you know, the same way that people improve upon Markdown, or the same way that people improve upon Python scripting, you know, or other kinds of computer code, like Swift programming language, right? Make it open source, make it available. And that's maybe the only way we're going to get around this. I don't know. If you guys have any solutions, let me know in the chat. I'd love to hear it. So that's my take on censoring voices. Do we lose our music?
Yeah, for some reason the it just disappeared.
See if I can do it.
I've tried a few times; it won't go up.
Well, that's why it says beta.
Yep. Right.
Well, I guess no. It says new now. Now they've removed the little beta dingus on there, so now it's
It still says music. It still says beta when you click new and then select the music. It says background music is still in beta. But, well, I have music, but you wouldn't like my music.
How do you know?
Well, I can try for you, but here we go. I need to turn on routing and music broadcast. Okay. Here it comes. I do a completely different kind of show.
Yeah, this might not fit for this show, but I don't mind it. But I do like I, it's like synth wave. It almost has like a synth wave sound.
Right? Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
I love synth wave. I like synth wave. I actually have a Pandora playlist of synth wave that I listen to all the time. I love like there's a band I love called Time Cop, 1983. Mm-hmm. Do you know Time Cop? 1983.
Yes.
I love them, or him, or whoever. I don't know who it is. But I love synthwave. My son actually started making synthwave on his on GarageBand. And
oh, I would love to hear it.
He's been trying to make some stuff for me to use in the show. He made a whole song the other day.
Oh, that's cool. Well, if he does, send it, and I can get it in here.
Cool. Yeah. So I'm having he'll make a. I totally dig synthwave. So we should definitely crank it up, or not crank it up, but you know what I mean. Like, where's like you know, like it's like where's. You know, where's Michael Knight and Kit when you need them? You know, yeah. Michael. All right. We've got more news to get to. So let's talk about, let me ask you this question. You ready for a question? You ready for a question? You guys in the chat ready for a question? Say yes. Ready for a question. All right.
Yes.
I'm going to throw this out there. Do you think it's okay for us to teach our children about slavery? Is it okay for us to teach our children about slavery? Yes or no?
I think so.
You think so? Okay.
Yeah.
Let me take it one step further. Do you think it's okay for us to teach our children that slavery was inhumane and that
yes.
Okay. And that people were routinely beaten, right? They were deprived of rights. They weren't fed well. They were put in chains and chained to boats and brought across the ocean to do intense labor and not be paid for it.
I think just like how Germany teaches their students about, you know, the Holocaust and Hitler, we should learn the dirt of this country as well, for sure.
Okay, good. So we've got slavery. Okay, I think we all agree on that, right? We should teach our children about the inhumanity of slavery, right?
Yes.
We should teach our children. Also, I think I'm going to throw this out there. Should we teach our children about how the founding fathers had a debate over including removal of slavery in the Declaration of Independence? Should we teach them that John Adams tried to get it removed from the Declaration of Independence? Wanted us to make sure that slavery didn't exist. He called it a stain. Benjamin Franklin stood up and said it was a stain on our country. This is no place for this. Should we teach our children that there was a fight about this?
Yes, and also the fact that pretty much putting Indians on reservations could also be considered slavery. They were putting them in a place they didn't want to be. So that is a form of slavery too. So yes.
Okay. And it might be uncomfortable, right, to have these conversations, right? It might be uncomfortable to look underneath the rug, right? It might be difficult to have these conversations. Let me ask you another question.
It might kind of shatter your American exceptionalism a little bit.
Right. It might make you uncomfortable about that American exceptionalism, right? What about, here's another question for you guys. I'll ask you guys in the chat. Should we teach our children that America's had a history of sexism, that it was built into our system? What do I mean by that? I mean, hey, women weren't allowed to vote. Women were not seen as like basically human beings on the same level as white men in the United States of America. Can we teach our children about the systemic sexism in our country as well? Is that okay to teach? Can we teach our children that it wasn't until the 1900s that women were allowed to vote? Like, isn't that, how do we go almost 100, over 100 years without being allowed to vote? Like, you're not even the same as men. You can't vote. Should we also teach our children about that women, even to this day, are still not paid as well as men for the same job in the same position? What about that? Should we teach our children about that? Is that okay to teach? Might make us uncomfortable. Is it okay to teach our children about that? Possibly. I think it is. Well, unfortunately, there a number of freaking morons right now that, and basically that whole little diatribe I just did there, that's basically critical race theory, right? That's really CRT. That's what the whole argument is right now about critical race theory. Should we be teaching our children about racism, systemic racism, slavery in the United States, sexism, things that make us uncomfortable? Like you brought up the Holocaust in Germany, right? They teach that in their schools there so that they never go through it again. They don't sweep it under the rug. They don't hide it. It's part of their curriculum. And that only happened, what, 70 years ago?
Well, I don't think like all the stuff that I've seen on critical race theory, I don't think the argument from people against it is that they don't want that to be taught. It's just that some of these teachers are taking it too far and making white children feel bad for being white. You know what I mean? Like children should not be made to feel like they are, you know, I agree that this needs to be taught. All of this stuff needs to be taught because it is in our American history. But you shouldn't have to shame children that are white, you know, like it's completely their fault, because it's not. It's the people from the past's fault.
But here's the thing. No one's doing that. And by the way, these freaking morons don't even know what critical race theory is, which we'll get to in a second. Critical race theory is being critical about our history and looking at it and not standing there and saying that, you know what, America is always great. America, is it possible to actually teach our children about these issues and not have to sit there and believe for a minute that, hey, you know, America's had a lot of problems and America's not great. And there are a lot of things that America's done wrong throughout our history. And we should pay attention to those things and we should call them out and we should teach our children about these things. And now here's what's happening in Tennessee. Tennessee is aiming to levy fines starting at $1 million up to $5 million on school districts each time one of their teachers is found to have knowingly violated state restrictions on classroom discussions about systemic racism, white privilege, and sexism. So we can't talk about white privilege. Like, what is white privilege? Really? I've had a whole life of white privilege. I'll talk about it. You know, I'm able to drive at night and not be pulled over because of the color of my skin. Right? I mean, this is ridiculous. Let's pause for a moment to reconsider that this critical race theory backlash is taking place when, you know, we literally have, like, Trump is not even president anymore. Like, Betsy DeVos is no longer education secretary. This is happening under a Biden administration. She's not the one issuing guidance right now against teaching that slavery existed and also was really bad. Like, the way that they want to teach it is that, it wasn't so bad. Like, slavery, it was inconvenient. You know, and some slaves were treated well because they got to live in the house with the master. Like, okay, like Sally Hemings sleeping in Monticello with Thomas Jefferson. That's the one instance of where we can point to a slave as being treated somewhat well. She was still a slave. Like, hell. So it's all happening right now. It's all happening.
Have you read any of the critical race theory documentation and stuff?
I have. Yeah.
Like the parts about having a, you know, black only societies and dividing societies up by color. Like, you agree with that stuff too?
No, I don't agree. The point, what I'm saying is that banning these teachers from trying to force a narrative, like that they're somehow trying to force a narrative about, you know, that trying to explain or sort of, I guess you could say, whitewashing history, for lack of a better term. Like trying to, so if a teacher wants to get up there and talk about the injustices of slavery, and a student then complains that I learned about how bad slavery was and that our country and the founding fathers had slaves, that the White House was built by slaves. Like, we can't talk about that stuff. That's inconvenient.
But I honestly don't feel like that's separating
people by the color of their skin to say, like, we should have a black only society or a white only society. So what is critical race theory? Well, Vice went to a hearing on this to see if they could actually find people who knew what this was all about. And here's what, this is amazing. So all of these people at the school board meeting are in Collier County, standing up there in front of all of these school board folks, telling them why we shouldn't have, why teachers shouldn't talk about sexism in our country, why teachers shouldn't be allowed to talk about racism in our country, and to point out the inequalities in our country, like Native Americans, like you brought up. So here is this amazing video from Vice. Take a look at this.
Teaching of critical race theory, or CRT, to K through 12 students.
So what is this meeting about? It's about textbooks, books filled with Marxist, communist, racially divisive ideologies.
CRT is a decades-old academic idea centering the role of racism in cultural and political life. But in the current debate, its meaning is ill-defined.
This critical race theory urges intolerance of all human beings that have been created in the image of God.
I do not agree with teaching children how to feel about things. That is called indoctrination.
I'll be damned if I will allow a Marxist revolution to take place in this country, and we need to reject our children even being taught it.
The Department of Education, Corcoran personally has said that he has directed his staff to go out to all of the publishers and get this critical race theory and all of its tentacles out of the existing materials that have been approved.
Keith Flaw is the founding director of the Florida Citizens Alliance, a conservative group that crusades against curricula it deems insufficiently patriotic or excessively progressive.
What did you see in those two books that you looked at? What did you object to?
Critical race theory. What critical race theory boils down to is teaching kids to hate their friends, teaching them to focus on race.
So he's the leader of this movement. And he says the critical race theory teaches you to hate your friends.
But I mean, I can see where he's coming from if you read it, because a lot of the text in that the documentation for critical race theory does talk about, you know, that kind of thing. It's I 100% agree with the fact that this needs to be taught in schools about racism and all this other stuff. I 100% agree. But if you read the actual documentation in the critical race theory documents, that's what I'm talking about. Like it does talk about white people in a very negative way. And like, you just have to go through and read the lines that I'm talking about where they want basically, black communities set up so that it's like they're segregated again.
Well, exactly. Well, I mean, but
and I can understand that the documentation, the actual critical criminal, I'm talking about the actual critical race theory. I'll try to look it up and get the lines
from
I'm
40 years
about.
Ago. I know we're talking about the academic research from 40 years ago. That's where it started. Like if you go back to those papers, yes. Among the things they argued in those original documents was, hey, black communities are specifically, black people are specifically, less likely to be getting, basically will not get a mortgage. Like, we will not give mortgages to black people. That literally, like, out of that was born this idea that, like, if you're not going to give us mortgages, then maybe we set up our own neighborhoods that you will give us mortgages. Like, and also talking about how government officials literally drew red lines to show where the black neighborhoods, like, you cannot cross this line. Black person tries to move in this neighborhood. Like, it's in our system. It's in our system. Realtors at the time, it was in the National Association of Realtors. Like, you cannot cross this red line if you're black. You cannot have a house here. You cannot get a mortgage here. Should we not teach that to kids? Should we not, like, actually shine a light on that? According to this guy,
yes.
According to this guy, no.
Rather than focus on character.
So let's look at some of these examples from the K through 5 books that you were objecting to right. The other day.
What I did was go through the teacher's manuals that are used to teach these books. And what you find is that it builds the foundation for critical race theory, not on the three words of critical race theory, but it builds the foundation on culturally responsive training, equity versus equality, social justice. So those are all innocuous terms in many people's minds, but when you look at how the left is now using those to drive the whole perspective of critical race theory.
What is the sentence in here
I'm not sure there is one.
I don't even mean the terms. I mean the concepts. What in the book conceptually do you object to that teachers will read this off?
Culturally responsive training is a whole notion in the book. Equity versus equality is a whole notion.
But that's in the book that the kids will read.
No, that's in the book the teachers are using as a guide to teach the kids.
Do you have the section where it says something about equity over equality? Is equity mentioned in the teacher's guide?
I don't recall. Culturally responsive training is clearly identified.
What is culturally responsive training? What does that mean?
Culturally responsive training is a fancy term for multiculturalism, dividing people by ethnicity.
Where is this from?
This is from the homework our team did.
So that's your language, not the language of the textbook.
It's language we found in the literature. I don't know what you're looking for, Mike.
I don't see anything in here that says that they're teaching critical race theory.
This is all very subtle. We've said that from the beginning. Critical race theory is a very subtle ideology that permeates this.
Okay, so there we get to the heart of it, right? Which is essentially the critical race theory, the 40-year-old texts that like go into great detail about redlining and all of that. Like, you know, it's like saying that you're teaching Marxism, you're actually taking a book from Karl Marx and you're teaching that. Or you can talk about some of the things that were discussed in those original CRT writings back many years ago, right? So you can have discussions about the inequalities and social justice and what that means. And nowhere in these textbooks are they going into any sort of ripping people apart based on their skin color. As this guy points out, he can't even find it. In fact, the literature that they find actually comes from their website, not the textbooks that the teachers are actually using. And yet, if a teacher wants to say something that could be construed as insensitive by a parent, you know, we can't. I mean, I've literally had, when I've gone on the air before, I've had people tell me, they're like, you know, you just bash America because we had slavery. Oh, a lot of other countries had slavery. And why are you being so, okay, just because, you know, black people, they've always had ability to buy a house. What are you talking about? Like, you should get over yourself. Like, America's the greatest country in the world. Like, what are you doing? Why don't you move to Canada? If you don't want to show how great America is. That's the argument. So we can't talk about these things. So I need to move. If I want to tell you what, like, I'm not happy the fact that we slaughtered Native Americans. Okay. I can't talk about that. That can't talk about putting Japanese people in internment camps during World War II. I mean, because they were living here. I mean, really? Okay. But they're going to levy fines starting at $1 million up to $5 million on school districts each time one of their teachers is found to have knowingly violated state restrictions on classroom discussions about systemic racism, white privilege, and sexism. So, I also love, by the way, that they were holding that hearing in the Martin Luther King building. Oh, that was hilarious. That board meeting. He's a democratic socialist, by the way. It was Martin Luther King. Can't talk about that, I guess. Let me see what people are saying here. Molly Girl says, Clayton, you're on point. Crystal Lee says, I was able to sell my home only after I took my family photos down because, you know, we're black. Yeah, didn't I do that story here on the show a couple months ago? That was one of the most disturbing stories. Like, a teacher should be able to have that kind of a discussion in a classroom. Hey, kids, you know, here's something that's really troubling. You know, the history of black people in America has been fraught with social injustice. It has been fraught with systemic racism. Here's an example how black people were literally redlined and not able to buy properties in certain neighborhoods because people wanted them out. Oh, and by the way, that continues today, students. Here's a story today where Black families routinely are reporting that when they have photos of themselves up on the walls, that when they're trying to sell their home, that it's more difficult for them to sell their home. And they've literally hire people that their neighbors will come in and act as if they are the family that lives there. They'll put up family photos on the walls of white families and the house sells. Or they get way more for their asking price, the appraised value. This has been reported multiple times. We've done it here on the show. Is that not okay to talk about? It's happening. Or would you prefer to be like these people and just sweep it under the rug? Let me know in the comments. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
I think too much is swept under the rugs. I mean, people are so scared to have conversations around things they deem uncomfortable. I always tell people, I have nothing to me is taboo. We should have no taboo subjects to talk about. We should be able to talk about everything. When I finally started in my personal relationships, like my girlfriends and stuff like that, completely being 100% honest and talking about anything, I've maintained friendships after we've broken up. I have better friendships out of it because I don't look at anything as something that we can't have a conversation about.
Yeah, exactly. Like, don't beat around the bush, you know?
Right.
I mean, maybe that was the Philadelphia in me, but I'd much rather just come out and say it. And, you know, instead of wasting so much time and heartache beating around the bush and not talking about it. That's what the show is
about. Well, and sometimes it's really uncomfortable. It's really uncomfortable sometimes to have to tell somebody, like I was with somebody for a long time. I'm just like, I just don't really have feelings anymore the way that I did. And just having the conversation and being open, it stings a little bit at first, but it's like so much easier to heal because you can work through it rather than hiding it, lying, and then not saying anything. And then they find out that you're doing something behind their back. And it's like, you know what I mean? It's so much better if you can just have the conversations out in the open. And that's like with my kid. When my kid was, getting to that age and I found out he was looking at porn on the computer, I went in and I said, here's a website you can go to that I know is safe and here's some Kleenex. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, he's going to do it. But it's like taboo. Everybody's like, no, don't do that. Don't do that. But it's like, we're kids, you know, they're kids. They do it. So it's like just nothing being off the table and being willing to have those uncomfortable conversations. And I've just found my life has been so much more, you know, relaxed because I'm not wondering like, you know, what somebody's thinking or whatever. Everybody always knows their place with me and I know my place with them.
Well, it's like one of the reasons I love Seinfeld so much was like watching Kramer, you know, like here's a guy who was just like unafraid to say whatever was on his mind. And you were like, what, you know? And it's like, that's why we love watching Curb Your Enthusiasm, right? It's like we wish we could all live like that, you know? And I think we should aspire to that in many ways. And, you know, without insulting and hurting other people, right? Like, if you're not hurting other people,
yeah,
that's a different thing. Like, hey, like when he says, hey, you look beautiful, but you need to get your nose fixed. You know, like that's okay. That's
well, like I had to have a talk with my son one time because we were standing in a grocery line and there was an Amish guy in front of us. And my son was like, hey, you stink, which he did. But I was like, you know, you gotta like pick your places to say things.
Yeah. Jeremy Kinlaw in our chat says, hey, just teach it correctly, but don't teach Black kids that they came from slavery. Like slavery is our roots. We came from greatness and slavery was just a part of a bigger history where Blacks came from. Yeah. Great point, Jeremy. Like, you know, unless you were born into slavery, you know, unless your family line, like literally the reason you're in the United States today is because you were brought over, your ancestors were brought over on a slave ship. And the reason you're in the United States is because you were born from slavery in the United States. But you could also point out that, hey, no, we existed before slavery, right? Until the Spanish and the Portuguese and, you know, other imperialist nations swept in and chained us down and put us in boats and sold us around the world. We existed before the Spanish showed up, you know? Yeah. A lot.
I mean, I would argue our prison system is modern day slavery. I mean, you've got, you know, what's his name? The musician, really good. John Legend made a point one time. It really made me think because I had no idea, but there are more incarcerated Black people today in prison than there were slaves during the times of slavery.
Oh, I bet. 100%.
And that just like that puts into perspective like how prisons are basically modern day slavery.
Right. Like, can you have a conversation about like why crack cocaine offenses like will net you this many years in prison, but cocaine, the white man's, you know,
Drug, the rich man's drug,
the rich man's drug, you know, the Hollywood Miami, you know, or Miami Vice drug, like nets you way less time in prison. Oh, I wonder why. It's the same frickin' thing. Mm-hmm. Right? It's the same thing. Oh, you can't have a conversation about that. You're going to get fined. And by the way, these school districts can't afford it anyway. I mean, you're going to get $1 million fines from the states if a parent says, I didn't like Billy learning about slavery. I didn't like Billy learning that, you know what, that our founding fathers had slaves. Yeah, they did. And they didn't release them even after they were even after they died, like Thomas Jefferson. You know, had a fathered children with a slave and then didn't even release them after his death, like in his will. That's a can't talk about that, though. Can't talk about that. We just need to go to Washington, D.C. and walk through the Jefferson Memorial and just listen to fancy music, you know, dun to dun, and feel like we're great Americans. But we can't talk about our dark past. Can't do it. Anyway, so I got one more story for you today, and this one's a little fun. So guess who's back? And many of you already guessed it in the chat, but you're not going to believe, maybe you will believe this, who has decided that if God speaks to her, she will run for president one more time. Or she will run for the Senate, excuse me, if and only if God comes and talks to her. And that woman, of course,
I think, wait.
Well, who is it?
I was going to say Michelle Bachmann, but now I think I'm wrong.
Oh, okay. I didn't think about Michelle Bachmann, but yeah, good choice.
Yeah, because she's already said that a couple times, that she was running for president because God told her to.
That's right. Yeah, because God, I mean, I guess God he just left right
out the, I guess the you're going
to
be laughed out of town and lose part, he didn't tell her that part, I guess.
Right. But yes, guess who is running, who only if God speaks to her and only if, I'm actually going to paraphrase it. I'll do this. I will quote her in my own voice, but I will read it verbatim. Okay. I will read it verbatim. And then you tell me who this person is. Okay.
Guess who's back? Back again.
Okay. Here's a part of it. Okay. America was dedicated to God. Our charters of liberty are written about and to God. And for those today who are running the show and deny that and want to change that, they're stripping away our foundation. How dare we strip from our Creator what our founders had dedicated to Him? How dare we try to take back and change it for mankind for some kind of secular use, secular enjoyment?
Well, I hate to tell you, I hate to say it, but if it ends up being in 2024, Palin versus Harris, I think Palin would win.
I think you're probably right. So it is, in fact, Sarah Palin. And if God wants me to do it, here she was on stage being asked this question. It's good to have her back.
Will you tell us today if you're going to run? And if not, give us a reason why.
But anyway, if God wants me to do it, I will. It will be a matter of, okay, practically speaking, if I feel that the state and the nation, but the state representing Alaska really, really wants me to or needs me to. And what I would do if I were to announce, I'd say, you know what, you guys better be there for me this time.
Come on.
Because a lot of people were not there for me last time. And that's why, characterization-wise, I got clobbered.
Yeah, exactly. Right? I mean, that's why she got clobbered, because characterization-wise, right?
Wants me to or needs me to. And what I would do if I were to announce, I'd say, you know what? You guys better be there for me this time.
Come on.
Because a lot of people were not there for me last time. And that's why, characterization-wise, I got clobbered.
Characterization-wise, I got clobbered. So there were a lot of people that were not there for me last time. And that's why, characterization-wise, I got clobbered.
Sarah. It's me. Turn around. I'm standing on the Russian border. Hello.
Is it time for me to run for the Senate, God?
I think it's time.
I knew you'd speak to me.
It's time for you to run for president, Sarah. This is your moment to shine. You betcha.
God, if I go out my window, what will I see?
Russia.
I will see Russia? That's Russia. Why I'm... I knew it, God. I knew that I would be a great leader because I can see Russia from my front door.
What does the proximity of the state give you?
They're our next door neighbors, and you can actually see Russia from land here in Alaska.
Well, explain to me why that enhances your foreign policy credentials.
Well, it certainly does. As Putin rears his head and comes into the airspace of the United States of America, where do they go? It's Alaska.
So she can see his reared head from Alaska.
Mm-hmm. There he is. I can see him. I see Putin right now. But, you know, I got to say how much fun that would be. I would enjoy that. And I have to tell you, though, the mainstream media would absolutely love it. So CNN would be falling all over themselves. You know, they would absolutely love it. I mean, I don't know. She was fired from Fox, right? I think, Roger Ailes, I think, fired her, if I'm not mistaken, back in the day. So I wonder how that would play out, right? Tucker Carlson, I think, called her like one of the dumbest people he's ever interviewed. So that's on the Fox side. I'd be curious to see how this would play. But CNN would love it. You know, I mean, CNN would absolutely love it.
If Trump can become president at this point, I believe anybody can. I believe if Kermit the Frog would run. Actually, Kermit's pretty smart, to be honest.
Right. He can sing, too.
Yeah, and he completes sentences and doesn't sound like a four-year-old, so... He talks to 4-year-olds better than Trump.
That's true. I would love Miss Piggy as a first lady, by the way. Wouldn't that be great? I would love Miss Piggy to be president because she would just tell it like it is, right? I mean, who would be like the best cartoon or animated character that would be great? I think Miss Piggy would be fantastic because she wouldn't put up with crap. She'd sock him right in the face, right?
Yep. I mean, send her to North Korea, boom, peace treaty.
Be like, well, how'd you do it? She's like, Kermit.
I punched him in the face.
I punched him right in the face. Hi-ya! Oh, man. Oh. Anyway, that's the show today, guys. Thanks so much for subscribing to the channel. Thanks for getting uncomfortable with us today. I think we had a lot to cover today on the show. Don't forget, we've got our daily morning newsletter. If you go to morninginvest.com, please subscribe. If you're not a subscriber of our free newsletter, what is wrong with you? It's free.
It's so good. Yeah, and it's so good. It's like, it's a quick read. Unless you go down a rabbit hole, because there's a lot of good stories that can take you even deeper, but I love it.
Exactly. So we cover a lot of stuff here. Just go to morninginvest.com and you can see our latest, you can go see some of the things we covered in the story, covered in today's newsletter. Here's one story we covered in the newsletter about eyeballs. Did you see this story that we wrote? It was a story about how they've now figured out that they can reverse bad eyesight.
What?
Yes. But it's China and Australia. I've been doing this research and by using a single injection. But here's the key. Here's the catch, though. You have to get an injection into your eyeball with a syringe.
Researchers. Do they put you to sleep?
I don't know.
They would have to put me to sleep because I would punch them. Like, they'd break the needle off in my eyeball.
Yeah, I couldn't handle that. No way.
There's no way. No way. I can't even. I don't even like a shot in my arm.
No. So go to morninginvest.com and you get the daily newsletter delivered right to your inbox first thing in the morning. You can read it over your cup of coffee, and it's literally only like, it'll take you about 5 minutes to read it, and we put a lot of work into it. So just go to morninginvest.com. You'll get a welcome email from me. So Clayton@morninginvest.com. Make sure you put us on your like VIP list in your email provider, because a lot of times they'll put us in like it might go to junk folder, or they have Gmail now has like a newsletter folder or something, or a promotions folder or a newsletter folder. So sometimes when people sign up with Gmail, it gets shoved into that folder. So just drag it into your inbox and then you won't have that problem anymore.
I couldn't even put contacts in, man. I wear glasses because I can't even touch my own eyeball with my finger.
Well, you know, I had LASIK surgery. So they go in with like, I don't know if you know this, but they use in LASIK surgery, they go in with a butter knife and they slice it open and they flop the eye over to the side.
Really?
Mm-hmm. If they don't have a butter knife, sometimes they use one of those crab knives, you know, like you get at Red Lobster. Really painful. I don't recommend anyone do it.
So, but and you're kidding, right?
Of course.
There's no way they would. But no, they use a laser. They do use some regular tools.
They use a laser, and it was great. It was great, life changing.
Didn't your doctor warn you though that if your eyes weren't done progressing? Because my eye doctor told me is like you can get LASIK, but you want to wait till your eyes are fully done progressing to get bad. Because if you get it too soon and your eyes aren't finished, you can only get LASIK one time.
Kristen says, "I heard they use a spork for LASIK." yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the deal was. I know that because I had an astigmatism, it was kind of tricky for me. But my doctor was one of the best. He was in New Jersey, Dr. Benedetto. He retired now, but he was fantastic. And because he was so good, I think he was able to do it. And I don't know. I don't know. I mean, like I think it was definitely not as easy as if I didn't have an astigmatism. Like it's just a different game if they have to deal with an astigmatism. So,
but because I've contemplated doing it, I don't know if my eyes are done progressing yet. So
Devin says a melon baller.
Yeah, that's what I was laughing at. I mean, it's the right shape, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just use that melon baller. It'd be perfect in there. Take it out and do some work on it. Yeah. No, I'm starting to see, like, I feel like my eyes are starting to get a little bad again lately. But maybe I've been spending so much time in front of the computer, and that's why I got the glasses. I got the blue light glasses. Mm-hmm. I've been starting to use that more now because I just feel like either that or I've just been too tired. So when I'm, you know, I can't tell. I'm like, are my eyes starting to get bad again? Or is it that I'm just too tired? So I'll report back.
Yes, Mika
says, hey, subscribe to your mailing list just now. Thank you, Mika. Hope you enjoy the newsletter. You'll get it tomorrow because we already sent today's out this morning, but you should receive it around 6:30 in the morning tomorrow. And just check your inbox to make sure that you got the welcome email. Try eye yoga. Is there a thing? Like my son has amblyopia, which is, and he had to do like eye training with the patch over the one eye. And so we're glad we caught that because if you don't catch it and then they get to be like 10 years old, it's like then the brain shuts off one of the eyeballs basically. And basically it's having like a dead eye, like where it doesn't do anything. It's just totally foggy. So because we had, this happens a lot, but you had to catch it early. Like if you catch it when you're young, then they can go through like patching and then the eye training where they have to like follow with the different, you know, glasses they wear, like a red and a blue glass with a certain thing. And so it trains it and it makes the eye stronger and stronger and stronger. And the brain like then puts it in parity with the other eye and then it works with them both. And it got really, really strong thanks to this eye training.
That's kind of crazy. But yeah, I've never heard of eye yoga. They have like downward pupil.
Downward pupil, up, yeah, pigeon pupil. All right, everyone. Well, my mom is visiting. I got to go see how she's doing. Sorry, I was so tired today. So if I stepped all over myself, I apologize. I'll try to get some sleep. I'm gonna go take a nap, see how my mom's doing, and I will be back here tomorrow with another show. Get uncomfortable, everyone. Thank you so much for subscribing to the channel, making us part of your morning every morning at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Peace out, everyone.